Welcome to PCMC. I'm Mike Buongiorno. I'm joined today once again by my good friend, Mr. Vin Forte.
Oh, hello.
Ooh, coming in hot. Coming in hot with a sexy bedroom voice.
We're talking about a very sexy movie today.
Somebody's had some Romulan wine or whatever the fuck you had. I had a stroke trying to say the word Romulan.
It's Romulan ale and Klingon blood wine.
Oh, I'm so sorry. You
fucking Philistine.
At some point, I bet, you know, DeForest Kelly was like, what's all this bullshit? gobbity goop. Cut.
Especially in three.
Yeah.
Oof. We'll get to that.
He's got stuff to do in three.
Yeah.
But today, before we get to it, let's talk a little bit about you. Vin, the folks.
This is an intervention? What's going on?
Yes. Let's talk about some of your other stuff. You're on Wrestle Rap. Produce Wrestle Rap.
Yeah.
How are things going over there?
That's going good. It's prime WrestleMania season. As of this recording, WrestleMania is next week.
Ooh.
Yeah, so if you enjoy the graps, go check that out.
What are you looking forward to this year's Snickers Presents WrestleMania?
the conclusion of the Bloodline storyline of Roman Reigns.
Oh, okay.
And Cody Rhodes and... Sure, the kids are going to like that Jake Paul has a match at WrestleMania.
They're going to love it. The Venn diagram of Star Trek fans and...
Jake Paul fans.
Jake
and
Paul
wrestling fans.
Yeah. This is the sweet spot.
You came to the right place.
And then there's Oddball. I can't ever remember if it's Oddball or Oddballs.
It's Single Ball.
Oddball.
Yeah.
Which is a fun name for a sports show.
Yeah. Because it's not too serious. I mean, I'm not someone who like breaks down like, okay, here are the games that were this week and here's what went down. But
yeah.
Like I like big topics and like fringe stuff. And then
there's food reviews.
Yeah. most weeks I do a cool down segment at the end of an episode where it's like something food related. And the past couple weeks, there have been a lot of interesting food stuff going on. One,
ooh.
KFC went nostalgic.
What are they doing?
And they brought back the Double Down.
Oh, KFC has been fucking up left and right, I think.
They were fucking up. The big fuck up to me was they got rid of... They didn't have fries. They used to have potato wedges.
Right, which
And
were,
that's what separated them from everyone else.
Right, distinctive.
Distinctive, and it's like they're good. They were well-seasoned, and then...
Beautiful.
Some idiot... Some dunderhead at KFC decided, well, we got to get into the fry game, the more traditional fry game.
Right.
And it's like, I haven't had their new fries. I'm sure they're okay. But there's no way they could be as good as the potato wedges.
I have had them. They are very, very similar to Burger King fries, which are good fries, but...
But they're not potato wedges.
Right. Why, you had something distinct and different... Why are you going to go for the...
And it's not even like you replace the wedges for something more unique to stand out. You replace them for something
backwards.
More generic. Yeah, you went backwards.
If you were to use Taco Bell's language, you're thinking inside the bun.
Yeah, you're thinking inside the bun.
Which is what you shouldn't be doing. Well, they also did earlier... Well, I should say not earlier this year. Last year... They did the Impossible Chicky Nuggies, and as a vegetarian, I was like, all right, I'm excited. I may have been the only person in North America to actually purchase this. I got myself a little, there was like a combo of that with the fries. This is when I learned about no wedges, and I was very disappointed. And it tasted like if you took... like one of those like erasers, like not the one at the
end. Someone said it was like rubbery.
Yes, like not the kind at the end of a pencil, but like
the thick, the rectangle eraser.
Yeah, yeah, the purple blue guys. Oh, yeah. No, I mean the pink blue guys, and you coated that with some delicious
seven herbs and
herbs and fry that up good, and gave it to me. That's what it was like, because it was like it tasted right. The outside tasted right, but the inside, and again, it could have been that. The place I went, they did not cook it correctly. That's possible.
Right.
But it hurt our teeth. It was literally like this is ridiculous. This can't be what they were
right
had in mind. But who knows? I never got a chance to try it again because they immediately realized our target audience isn't vegetarian. Yeah, so what are we doing?
KFC. What are we doing?
What were we thinking?
Who were the ad wizards that came up with that one?
Yeah.
But it was KFC, and then this week's big topic was the fact that sort of a lot more to chew on, no pun intended, but
it's this kind of wordplay that you get over at Oddball.
Exactly.
So available anywhere podcasts are found.
Yeah.
Please go on.
But it was about how, like, okay, old school and new school. Like, old school, you used to go into a Subway and
you'd see that mascot, Jared Fogle. Thank God, that's a good guy. That guy's got himself together. That guy's a hero.
He's a hero.
Someone to aspire to.
Exactly. Someone for kids to look up to.
Yeah. Oh.
But for some reason he went away. I guess the contract ran out or something.
I don't know. Every time I Google what happened to Jared, my computer breaks. So.
but it used to be you go in and you would, if they had like special subs that month, they would tell you what the subs are.
Sure.
Now, and they're not the only ones that do this, it's every place now. Taco Bell, Burger King, McDonald's.
Yeah.
But Subway made news this month because their app did 1 million downloads last month.
Ooh.
It's like the fastest growing fast food app. And it's keeping pace with a lot of these other ones.
Yeah.
Because now what's happening is instead of going into a store and getting coupons.
Yeah.
Or like them even telling you what the specials are.
Yeah.
They drive you to the app. So, and again, all the other places do this, but Subway's been the most sort of aggressive about, like, we're not even going to announce what the specials are. Like,
wow.
You got to go to the app, and there's something called the Subway Vault in the app, where it's like, you got to log in with your account, and that's how you access, like, the special subs. And you can order the subs through the app.
The vault?
Yeah.
I don't want to know about the Subway vault and what's in there.
Is that where they're keeping Jared? Is he locked up in the Subway vault?
And his creepy VHSs. I think Taco Bell, and we'll eventually get to the point of this episode. I think Taco Bell has an incredible app because Taco Bell is a place that offers a lot of variability. You could swap things for other things and double things and add things.
And if you're smart enough to swap things out, you save money.
Right. And doing it in person is annoying, right? It's much easier to just do it on the app, send it to them, and they've got it written in front of them, and that's what they put in. Whereas, like, if you go in and you say, I want this and that, but give me that instead of this and blah, 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 you know, you're going to run into trouble.
And I do like that a lot of the apps, you know, there's a lot of like promotions and coupons that they tell you about with it. Like, you always get a push notification when, we've got like a special going on this week. Like, okay, that's cool. But there is the conspiracy part of me that's like, you know, fast food prices have drastically gone up in the past couple of years.
Yeah.
Specifically since the pandemic. And I wonder, would it be better if they just lowered the prices?
Mm-hmm.
Or are they like tricking us into thinking we're getting a deal by being like, this week you get $1 off cinnamon twists.
I know that's an interesting question because I use the Taco app enough that I'm always getting $1 off of this or $1 of that.
But like, if you were to add it up and then like divide by like, I don't know, 2014 prices, like, would you really be? Are they giving you a good deal or not?
Well, I wonder how much. And again, this is not what this episode's about. It's about Star Trek II: Wrath of Khan. But I do wonder how much of their business depends. How much of it depends on frequent users?
Mm.
Like, do they go after the general public who every now and then might need to eat something, and then maybe they're gonna run through? Or do they go, no, we have our diehard people, and those are the people that keep us going.
I mean, I guess it's a little of both, because like, they wouldn't ever do anything new if they didn't have the hardcore fans.
That's true. Well, anyway, so this is PCMC, and today we are going back into the world of Gene Roddenberry's Star Trek. Now, yeah. Gene Roddenberry has very little to do with what we're talking about today.
No, he actively he did not like this.
He was actively against it. There are some people who believe that he was the person who leaked that Spock was going to die in this movie to fuck it over. So he has, what, executive consultant? bullshit it's one of credit those
things. Like, yeah, he has, like, we can't take him off it completely.
Right, right. He has bullshit credits in this movie, but he
this is like the beginning of Gene Roddenberry. Like I know, it's a great idea that everyone likes to think that you know, singular auteurs,
right?
Like it's it's great. Like one person is in control of everything. This is sort of like the beginning of the studio actually making a great case for that not being true, because right. Two and six are largely considered the best of those original series movies. Right. And those are the two that Gene Roddenberry has the least to do with.
And they're both directed by the same person.
Both directed by the same person.
Nicholas Meyer.
Nick Myers. And Gene Roddenberry actively hates them to the point where Star Trek VI, he got into a fight with Nicholas Meyers during a pre-screening and then like a day later died.
Got into a fight with him?
Yeah. Was like, this sucks. Like, I hate this direction. Like, this is not... Gene Roddenberry, again, it's a case... Much like with Star Wars and George Lucas.
Yeah.
Where, okay, you got to give the guy credit for the big ideas and, like, doing a lot of things right.
Right, of course.
But that doesn't negate the fact that he had some very weird ideas as well.
Yeah, Kirk should fist fight Jesus and all those weird things you hear about.
Or even just, like, the weird stuff, specifically with, like, Next Generation.
Oh, yeah, you were telling me there's weirdly sexual stuff in Next Gen, right?
Well, not only that, there's always been... Star Trek has always had, like, a sexual element to it.
Right. It's horny nerd.
It's very horny.
Yeah.
But in the first season... One of the reasons the first season of Next Generation is not great is because Gene Roddenberry had a mandate that because it's the future, there's no interpersonal conflict. So you couldn't have, like...
drama.
Yeah, like, oh, you couldn't have an episode stories. Where, like, Riker and Worf get mad at each other.
Right.
And, like, gotta hash it out. It's like, why?
Right. Like, the heart of drama is conflict, and he was like, no, we can't have conflict.
Yeah, like, if Roddenberry lived long enough to watch DS9, his head would have exploded.
He hate everything that. Now. I think Shatner said that recently. Which, whatever, but he would hate everything that goes on now. But
Shatner
a shit?
Yeah, Shatner also, I don't know if you saw this, like, sort of freaked me out a little. Not freaked me out, but, like, you know, remember, like, a year or so ago where he went up into space?
Yes.
Do you remember what he said when he came back?
No.
People expect, okay, so he goes up in space, it's one of those, like, pay a bunch of money, go up to the stratosphere and come down.
Right.
And people were like, what was it like? Were you... And they're expecting him to say, like, oh, it was beautiful. Like, you don't ever see, you know, get a scope of the world until you really see it from that length, like, yeah, with such a beautiful people. And he said when he was up there, he got, like, the most dread he's ever felt in the world. And he basically had, like, an existential crisis.
Yeah.
And was like, oh, like, we're fucking this world up. Like, this is terrible.
Wow.
Like, he had a bad trip.
That's how I would feel if I did that.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess we all wanted him to be like Captain Kirk. It'd be like, ah, it was great. Love being back in space.
This is the first step to what we're really...
Yeah. Everyone live long and prosper.
Yeah.
Hilarious. So, well, we've already done an episode on the original series.
Yeah.
And we did an episode on Star Trek The Motion Picture, mm-hmm. which is the first film in this series. If you don't know, Vin is a lifelong... Star Trek fan. He's watched it all. He's a big Star Trek fan. I am a new person traveling through the world of Star Trek. So we have kind of different perspectives. So bouncing off one is a good place to start, which is, had one been successful, Roddenberry probably still could have been boss man.
He would have had more control.
Right. But being that one kind of flopped so hard... And he pushed so hard for it to be his, like, whatever ideal that they were like, they kind of tore it away from him.
Right. They're like, we gotta liven this thing up a little.
Right.
Like, we gotta have some kind of action.
And, you know, you said this before. I think a lot of the general public would say, if they had to pick one, they'd say two. This one, Wrath of Khan, is the best one.
Because it really does hit that sweet spot. Because I know some Star Trek fans are like, oh, we don't want too much action in Star Trek. Mm. We want to still have the cerebralness of it all. It's like, and this nails it. This, like, nails everything you would want from Star Trek.
Right. Yeah, it's a better It's more aligned with the show than the first movie is.
Yeah.
Totally. Because you've got the characters, you've got them all doing stuff, you've got charming stuff going on. You know, they figured out the formula of, okay, you've got to give something for everyone to do. You've got to give Scotty one thing. You've got, you know, like, you've got to give something to everybody.
Yeah.
You couldn't have, like, with one where, like, Uhura does nothing. You know what I mean? You know, you've got to have all this stuff.
Yeah, and you've got to have some action. Time to the dad from Seventh Heaven.
Right. You've got to have some action. You've got to have some humor. We got to lighten things up was probably the big driving, like.
But even with lightening things up, like, there's still stuff in Wrath of Khan where it's like when you put the beetle in the guy's ear, like, that's
frightening. That's pretty fucked up. Yeah. It's also, I think, and I just rewatched it again last night in preparation. It's actually like a very thoughtful movie. It's rare that you see a big I'll call it a blockbuster. Like, when you see a big blockbuster that has thematic elements.
Yeah, it's very focused on, like, aging.
Right, aging, life, death, sacrifice. There's a lot of Moby Dick in it. First of all, Khan quotes Moby Dick a lot in it. Which, I've never read Moby Dick. I know a little bit about it. Like, when he says about Kirk, he tasks me. That's straight from Moby Dick. And you also see when Chekhov is in his little, like, bunker bedroom, you see he has Moby Dick. So he's been reading Moby Dick, just stewing about Kirk for the last 20 years.
Yeah, it's like, who gave him Moby Dick?
Yeah. And so, well, let's say this, like we said, this is directed by Nicholas Meyer. It's written by, well, the story's by Jack P. Sewards and Harve Bennett and Samuel Peoples, and the screenplay is by Sewards and Myers. The DP is Gabe Reicher, which I have to say, I've been thinking about this. PCMC maybe is negligent in that I often don't say the director of photography enough. And I'm sorry about that, because director of photography is very important. The reason I wanted to look this up is because next week we're talking about Star Trek 3.
Yeah.
And I think Star Trek 3 looks very bad. And this movie looks very good.
And it's got mostly the same people, too.
And the same sets. So it's very, it's a real interesting thing to look at 2 and 3 and see how the right way to light things and the wrong way to light things.
That's an interesting trope that I think is going to come up as we go through these movies, that you'll see a Star Trek movie that looks like all the money is, like, on the screen.
Yes.
And then the very next one will be like, is this a straight-to-DVD thing? Like, what is this? Because that happens specifically with this, and then much later with First Contact into Insurrection.
Yes. Which I've not seen. Wait, have I seen Insurrection? No, I have not seen Insurrection. I've only seen the
Red Letter Media.
Red Letter Media talking about it.
But even from that, you can tell it's, you're like, right. First Contact is like, we're putting it all out there. Like, this is the next gen movie,
right?
And it's like, okay, what are we gonna do for a follow up? We're gonna browns and beige, and
right.
Be on an Earth tone planet.
Right. We'll get into it next week. But I feel like Part 3 looks like bad TV. It looks more Star Trek-y than anything else because it looks like the show. It's overlit. It's poorly blocked. The directing's all, like, the acting's all over the place. Like, it was the one Leonard Nimoy directed, or the first one Leonard Nimoy directed. Did he direct any more? Did he direct 4?
I don't know offhand.
Because I know 5 is
directed by
Shatner. I think he did,
and then 5 directed, if I was, he might have directed 4, because I think that's when Shatner was like, well, I gotta direct one of these.
Right. Let's see.
And 4 is better than 3. Like, I will agree with the people who, like, I don't think 3 is a bad movie, just to touch on it. But I don't think it's great either, and I do think it's a lesser film than both 2 and 4.
4 is directed by Leonard Nimoy. Okay, so also we should say the score for this movie is by James Horner.
Mm-hmm.
The first movie was Jerry Goldsmith, and he created that theme that's iconic because it was used as the theme for Next Gen.
Yeah.
But James Horner does this and 3, and basically this and 3 kind of have the same suite. It's kind of the same music.
Well, because 2, 3, and 4 are a trilogy.
Right, they call it the Genesis trilogy.
Yeah.
And we'll get into Genesis because, You know, we're recording, you know, we're talking about 2 and 3 together, and we're releasing these two different episodes. But they, you know, the comment, we'll bring up 3 probably a lot in this episode, as much as we'll bring up 2 in the next episode, because they are in dialogue with each other. They, first of all, they take place one right after the other, right, and it's the same everything, but somehow things are working and not working, and 3 betrays a lot of what's good about 2, I think.
Yeah.
Especially Savick, especially everything that happens with Savick.
Well, it's a totally different actress too.
Right, right. Which there's a bunch of reasons why that might be.
Yeah.
Savick is the young,
like Spock's apprentice.
Right, right, right. In this movie, she's Spock's apprentice. In the next movie, she's something a little more to Spock.
Yeah.
And then in 4, she was going to be Spock's wife and the mother of his child, but they cut it out.
I think that was a good call.
Right. They cut a lot of things. They basically... All right. So I read a really good book about the whole franchise called Phasers on Stun by Ryan Britt. And it's really... he does a lot of great research. It's really... It's an easy read. If you like Star Trek, definitely read this book because he goes through everything. And he talks about how one of the problems with the film series is... It's got a little bit of that Rocky-itis where, you know how like in every Rocky movie he retires?
Yeah.
Every single Star Trek movie is about, we're getting old. This is, we're too old for this.
Right.
And there's this desire to pass the torch, but it never happens. Like, oh, Kirk's going to get a kid. Oh, no, the kid's dead. Oh, Savick, she's going to be the new Spock. Nah, we're bringing Spock right back.
Again, that's she's why, gonna be written that's out. Why there's this inconsistency with the movies, because 2 works the best because it nails the, we're getting too old for this.
Right.
3 tries to do that again, but it doesn't really work. 4 works because it's a totally different, like they're all the way back in time.
Yeah.
Like it's a comedy. It works because it's doing something completely different. 5, again, kind of goes back to this, like, oh, we're getting old for this.
Right.
Then 6 separates itself and is very, really good because it's the analogy for the Cold War.
Right.
It's the Cold War one where like the wall finally comes down, but in space.
Six,
and the Klingons.
It really, yeah, it's 6 really, and it's also directed by the director of this, Nicholas Meyer. So it's very fun. It's very actiony. And 6 kind of really gets his hands into the Klingon conflict. And it's like, let's do something with this storyline eventually. Let's like, we've had this conflict for so long. Let's like actually move this forward in a way. Actually, yeah, and that's the last one of the original cast, except for...
Kind of,
yeah. But we'll eventually do them all. So, Kirstie Alley, like I said, Kirstie Alley's in this movie. She plays Savick. Actually, most of the crew here are supposed to be, like, young cadets on a training mission, but what do you know, shit goes sideways.
That's how it starts.
Right.
They're on a training mission...
Well, we should say, so this is movie's famous for Spock dies in it. And Gene Roddenberry, we don't know. Many believe Gene Roddenberry was the person who leaked it because he didn't want Spock to die and he was getting pushed out and he was mad about it. So
I think he leaked it because he was the one going to conventions at that time being told that he was hot shit.
Yeah, yeah. So Gene Roddenberry leaked it, but they did something really clever in reshoots. Which is, there's the opening is this fake scene. It's the Kobayashi Maru, which you might know if you saw the later J.J. Abrams movies. It's the Kobayashi Maru is a test. It's this...
what are you doing in a no-win scenario?
Right. Basically, it's a training test.
It's basically like you got to have the balls as the captain to either like sacrifice someone's life.
Right.
Or like just like, you know, torpedo the ship.
Right.
Like,
so it kind of makes no sense when you really think about it because it's all for one cadet and there's like 9 other people that have to like act,
yeah.
like literally like do acting in it, like die. But Spock dies, quote unquote, in that scene as a part of the exercise. And then when Kirk sees him, he says, "Aren't you dead?" They filmed that after because they thought this will throw them off.
Right.
They'll think, oh, he didn't really die. It also works as good foreshadowing because he does die.
Right.
But it's a good way of people being like, the rumors are wrong. This is what they were talking about. He's alive. But it's a fun way to start the movie. You know, it's like, oh shit, we're all fucked, we're dead. You know, Scotty, like, Bones dies.
Yeah, Spock they all dies. Die.
They all die. There's special effects, and then you hear Kirk go, "All right, cut it, end it," and then they end the simulation. Huge heroes opening for
They open that, they open a huge door of like lighting behind him.
And yeah, he's in silhouette. He walks out, and there's Captain Kirk, and he was administering the test, and he's like, you're fucked up. And
what's funny about the Kobayashi Maru, to completely sidetrack this discussion, is
yeah.
Every single time it happens in Star Trek,
yeah,
someone fails it, and they inevitably go, what did I do wrong? What, I don't get it. It's like, do you have Google in this future time? Like, can you just look up and be like, oh, this is what the test is?
Yes. Yeah. Side note, when I was a teacher, I would put Kobayashi Marus on tests. I'd have questions where every... I would only just do one, but it was a question where all of the choices were wrong. It was a no-win question. Yeah. And I would always just give the students the point, yeah, and I would explain it when we went over it. Mm-hmm. But I would do a Kobayashi Maru, yeah, just for my own pleasure, yeah, I guess. The point in this is it's supposed to teach someone who might be in command that sometimes you're going to be fucked. You're going to be in a way that you can't save everybody and you can't fix it. And just what's the graceful way in which you keep yourself together and do as good as you can?
Yeah.
And, you know, they start, you know, we find out in the beginning, like, Kirk is the only person who's ever passed the Kobayashi Maru.
But you don't find out why, and then it turns out that he cheated.
He cheated. He pre-programmed the system, which J.J. Abrams shows us in the later film. Which is funny because then Savick is like, so you've never faced death. Which is, again, good foreshadowing, yeah, for Spock dying. Spock dying, I think, is such a big pop culture moment. Like, I saw a couple years ago, Hallmark puts out Christmas tree ornaments.
They put out an
order
of him dying. Yeah, like, why would you do that for Christmas?
Merry Christmas. Remember this moment?
Remember Spock dying?
Right, because, and I think Doctor Who homage this when David Tennant died. They're in between. There's glass in between them.
Right.
So Spock. So Spock is dying of radiation poisoning, and Kirk is another way, and then he dies. And to undo it, which, by the way, we have to say, they kind of always knew they were going to undo it. That's why.
Right.
He says, you know, at the end, and we're skipping all over because I imagine you've seen Star Trek too. I don't got to explain it to you. But at the end, you know, he does the mind meld very quickly with Bones and says, remember. So it's very much telegraphed that he is going to come back. Yeah. But Nicholas Meyer didn't want him to. That's why he refused to direct Search for Spock. They offered it to him, and he said, no, I want Spock to stay dead. Yeah. And they were like, no, we can't do that. Yes, Kirk has his... Of course, the wigs are just... They've always been weird.
Yeah.
His hair in the films is sort of curly and dark, nothing like it is in the original series.
Yeah, that's true too. And I never really thought of that. In the original series, he's got the,
it's blonde, sort of pinned slick, straight. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we see Kirk's very sexy bachelor pad. It's his birthday. Bones gives him some Romulan ale, which is illegal, and also a pair of glasses. Which I guess in the future I would do something for a normal patient of your age, I would do something else, but he's allergic to it. So he's allergic to whatever the cure for needing glasses.
Yeah.
So he gives him just regular old glasses. Again, it's the idea of aging.
Which, don't the glasses also come into play later in the movie?
Yes. Yeah. And in the end, they break, which itself is an interesting metaphor. Like, no, we refuse to age.
Yeah.
So we also have in this movie, B.B. Besh is Carol Marcus, who was not in the original series, but is presented to us as an old fling of Kirk's that his best friends, his BFF Spock and Bones, know about. And you know, she's an old flame, but it didn't work out because, you know, he's in love with the ship. He can't commit himself to a woman.
Yeah.
We find out that he's kind of a deadbeat dad, although they really kind of let him off the hook because he says to Carol, you know, I did what you said. I stayed away. And she's like, well, you know, we were never going to be together. I was never going to domesticate you. So it was the best thing. So he knows he has a son out there. And he meets his son. His son is David Marcus, played by, oh, what's the fella's name? By the way, David Marcus, I always thought he was kind of like a wimp. But I'm wondering, was that the point? You think?
He's kind of wimpy. He's like, he's not his father.
He's a scientist, right? Which is clearly different from the military. He's very anti-military.
Yeah.
When he thinks that the Federation is going to take over their experiment.
Oh, he's upset.
He's like, I told you the military was going to do this. This is what happens. But beyond the fact he's a scientist, he just seems a little bit.
It's a little wimpy.
He's a little wimpy. Kind of like Luke in the first Star Wars. Here I said it. Go back and look.
Yeah.
Wimpy and complainy. He's very bratty. He's also like, mom, like he's got a too close relationship with his mom to the point where he's like,
you're on a starship. I mean, not even on a starship. They're on a satellite.
Yeah, doing their experiment, working on the Genesis program.
Yeah, doing their sick mommy experiments.
they're dirty experiments. Yeah, he even seems in some ways like he comes off as jealous of Kirk. Because I guess he also knows Kirk's his father.
Yeah.
So he's like, that overgrown Boy Scout used to hang around with. It's just like, this is all very uncomfortable. yeah, he's played by Merritt Buttrick, David, and he's in this and part three. Again, originally in the script for this, he was meant to, there was a romantic interest between him and Savick. Just a sort of teasing of it.
Yeah.
And then that was going to be developed more in three. But it's cut out of this, and then in three, it's cut out. Mm-hmm. So where you think there really should be a romantic element between them, it's not there in three. So tell us about the Genesis project.
So the Genesis
project. It's called Mega Drive in Japan.
Yeah. In UK and Japan, it's called the Mega Drive. Yeah.
No, but what's the Genesis project?
The Genesis project is basically this like super weapon that if you shoot it on a planet, it'll basically create life.
Yes. It's like Terraform. It's like
it's like add water, create planet.
Right. Which, I know you shouldn't pull on strings like this because it's fucking sci-fi, but how does it create a sun? Like, they're looking for a vacant, empty rock that has no life form so they can use it for the experiment.
Right.
But you see in 3 that it doesn't just Terraform, it creates a sun to give it life. So how does it create a sun?
I don't know.
Anyway, the point is, and you said, you interestingly put it, you called it a super weapon. The villain in this movie and the villain in 3 see it as a super weapon. But the scientists who created it see it as like the creation of life. They see it as like we can create life.
Right, like if we had to evacuate a planet.
Right.
Like we can go and just create a new planet.
Right. But if you threw it on a planet that already had life.
Oh, it would destroy it.
Right. It would destroy it and put new life. So it is a really interesting thing because in some ways it's similar to like the Death Star idea, which is just Cold War mentality coming through sci-fi. Mm-hmm. The fear of, mass destruction. But it's this double-edged thing, which is kind of like the whole movie is this double-edged thing about youth and death. It's like life and death. It's both. In this movie, Khan's main motive is revenge on Kirk. But once he hears about Genesis, he's like, well, we should do this too.
Yeah.
In 3, it's all about Genesis. It's very interesting. And there's a whole team of scientists that work on it, including David and his mother. In this film, all the scientists are murdered besides David and his mother. And then for reasons I don't understand, the mother's not in 3. And all right, we'll get to it when we get to 3.
Yeah.
So that's Genesis, and that's they call 2, 3, and 4 the Genesis trilogy. Mm-hmm. So this episode is a sequel to an episode of, this film is a sequel to an episode of the original Star Trek series called Space Seed.
You bet.
Which was, again, it was a plan after the first film's failure to like, all right, let's go back to where things worked. But it's a weird episode to make to sequelize because of all the people Kirk and the crew come up against in the original series. They were way more villainous people. You know, he's not that villainous. He's you know, he's obviously he's like there's the whole eugenics thing. Mm-hmm. But his whole thing in the show is he's like a he's toxic masculinity. He wants to like he tries to sexually assault people. He tries to take over the ship. Mm-hmm. And he Kirk's not particularly that bummed about it.
He gives him a planet at the end of the episode. Yeah. He's just like, oh, well, you seem like you could be a good leader. Like, you're just kind of a man at a time. I'm going to give you this class M planet. Like,
right. I'll give you and your cult this little planet, this little paradise for you to go and let's see how toxic masculinity works in creating a civilization.
Yeah, the only sin, though, that this movie points out is that I guess Kirk just never checked up on him.
Right, because he says in this movie, because when they Chekhov is like, we gave you a nice planet, and he's like, yes, but he never came back. And 6 months after you left us there, another planet in the system exploded, making this planet a fucking nightmare and killing his wife, which is he blames Kirk for the death of his wife. He's obsessed with Kirk.
Yeah.
So they do the thing. This is actually pretty, it's cool practical effect, but also scary. They have this thing where like there's the one indigenous life on the planet that Khan and his people are on. It's this like weird alien monster bug, and they're young, like these little larva, mm-hmm. and you put them in people's ears, and it makes the people like very susceptible to suggestion. Even if they don't want to do it, it's like it's a struggle for them to fight you.
Yeah.
So he puts it in. Well, they say Chekhov is on a different ship. It's Chekhov and then Tyrell, who's the captain of the ship he's on. Mm-hmm. He puts it in their helmets, and then you see it go in their ears, and it's pretty fucked up.
It's pretty horrific.
It's real messed up. And then they're like, he uses them to lure in Kirk. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that gets repeated throughout this film and the next film is Spock says the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few. And then Kirk says, or the one. And that's repeated throughout these films. Again, it's thematic.
Yeah, they're actually doing stuff.
Right, right. This movie's like a blockbuster with a brain. You know, the thing about Star Trek is, and I'm not an expert, I'm only now kind of going through it all and reading about it. But it seems to me that the thing about Star Trek that's unique is it's actually a unique stew. Sometimes it's very heady. Sometimes it's very silly. When you talk about what is Star Trek, the answer is manifold, and sometimes it's contradictory things. So you could argue, what's your favorite kind of Star Trek?
Right.
To me, the kind of Star Trek that this film is my favorite kind of Star Trek, where it is thoughtful, but it's not like Part One, where it's trying to be 2001 Space Odyssey. It's thoughtful, yet we have compelling characters, mm-hmm. and the dynamic of the characters, especially the main three guys in the center, Bones, Spock, and Kirk, like them experiencing what goes on through their relationships is what makes it interesting. And you got some quips, you got some fun, you got some action.
Yeah, it's all very palatable.
There's great action in this movie.
Well, that's the thing, too, is that it's action, but it's action to move the plot along. Like, something happens, and then there's a reaction to it.
Yeah.
That sets up the next thing. And then if there's more action, it's like there's an actual reason for it. It's not just, a big action extravaganza just because we have the budget to do special effects now.
Right. Again, everything has to be grounded in character. So, like, to me, the most thrilling scene is the scene where they are, they're on screen, they're talking to each other. Kirk is, when he says, like, put them on screen, and they're communicating ship to ship, and he's talking to Khan, and Khan's like, give me the Genesis device, and I'll kill you all. And then Kirk says, you just want me, just take me and kill me and leave my crew. And he says, like, okay, well, I'll think about it if you give me the Genesis device first. Mm-hmm. And he's like, okay, the data. He wants the data of how to create the Genesis device. So Kirk's like, okay, let me get that for you. But as he turns around, he's like, okay, here's what we're really gonna fucking do. There's a fucking cheat code on every Federation ship, and if we can hack through the cheat code, we can control his ship from our board. And then Khan would be like, "What's going on over there, Kirk?" And he'd be like, "Oh, no, I'm just give me one second, Khan.
It takes his time.
We gotta, come on, I got to download it. Give me a break."
Yeah, I only got dial-up here. What are we doing?
Yeah, and so, you know, like they can be seen, but also they're trying to pull this thing, and it's like it's very tense. It's
well, that's a big thing with this movie that a lot of people forget is that Khan and Kirk never meet in person face to face.
No, they don't have a fight like an actual like fist fight, which happens a lot in the show.
Yeah, and regrettably happens in Generations,
and in the next movie, 3, it happens.
Yeah.
This is all about I think you said it before, brinksmanship.
Yeah.
Like
some of the best episodes and certainly in this movie, it's a big game of brinksmanship.
Right. I've got a ship, you've got a ship. You don't know how much my ship, how much power I have and how much I can really destroy you. Mm-hmm. And I don't really know how much power you have. But we also, so it's like chess. Like, what move are you going to make? What move am I going to make? I'm going to bluff. Are you going to, you know, catch my bluff? And that sort of stuff, I think, is some of the best Star Trek stuff.
Yeah, because it's compelling. And again, like, it's something that doesn't need a bunch of phaser fire to be exciting.
Right. Because
you're hanging on, like, what's going to happen.
Right. The most exciting scene with the greatest sort of tension is the scene I just talked about, where basically it's just two guys talking and one guy behind the other guy's back is like, okay, let's do this. We've got fucking 3 seconds to do this.
Yeah.
You know, it's and this happens a lot. You know, the opponent says, okay, I'll give you 2 minutes to do it. And they're like, okay. And then Kirk has 2 minutes to figure out how to save the day, which is, again, Kirk is this, you know, he's a sci-fi icon, right? And, you know, sometimes he does fist fight. Sometimes he does do things like that. But to me, when he's the most that works for me, that type of bravado, is in these situations where it's his captaining is what makes him exceptional. Not that he's the cock of the walk. He's got the coolest jackets with the highest pop collars. You know what I mean? Which he fucks doesn't. All the bitches. No, he has a great jacket in both this and 3, and we'll talk about the jacket. It's that he doesn't sweat. That's what makes the character interesting. No matter how fucked up things are, he's like, all right. And that's what he says about the Kobayashi Maru. I don't believe in no-win scenarios. Even when things look totally fucked, I'm going to try something. Oh, by the way, there's a really funny moment, though, which is when they're in that scene, Khan is like, give me Genesis. And Kirk goes, Genesis, what's that? Yeah. Which reminds me of Fat Tony from The Simpsons, where he's like, what's a truck? Yeah. Like, he plays so dumb. He plays too dumb. Ah, where's the truck? What's a truck?
Yeah.
just Kirk not selling it at all. Like, Genesis, what's that? I don't know what you're talking about. But all it does is buy him a second, which is all he needs.
Yeah.
It's all he wants. But again, Savick is so interesting because Savick is, you know, we're told that the whole ship is full of these young students and they keep making jokes about these are kids. But Savick's the one that Spock is grooming to, which is a funny use of the word grooming.
Right.
Considering what happens in the next movie where she grooms him. Spock is grooming her to be a captain. He even, like, lets her take the ship out.
Yeah.
You know, he lets her sit in the captain's chair.
But so ultimately, their relationship is that she's more like Spock used to be.
Yes.
And she's got to learn that, like, oh, like it's not all about logic. It's not all about, like, Vulcan instincts.
Right. So what makes this scene interesting, or a lot of the scenes on the bridge interesting, is we're actually watching Kirk and Spock and Bones and them all maneuver through her eyes because she was going on a training mission that's gone awry. And, you know, there's a point early on where she says, like, regulation, blah, blah, blah. And Spock, like, corrects her. He's like, you're embarrassing yourself.
Yeah.
Don't tell the captain the regulations. And would she, you know, he, and even Kirk is doing this bit of, like, bravado to her. Like, he's kind of showing off to her, like, watch what I do now. Like, I'm going to do something that you never even knew we can do, which is hack one ship from another ship. Again, I'm going to be repetitive. Character. Character is story, right? It can't just be plot, plot, plot. It's got to be characters.
Which and really, like, once we get to this point in the movie, like, it's all character. Because once we set everything up, the whole last, like, half hour, 40 minutes of the movie is basically that standoff. Like, in, like, it's space chess.
Right, right. And from that point on, it's just go, go, go. Yeah. There's no fat on the bone at all at that point. It's just such a pleasing movie. You and I saw it recently at Alamo. Which a big crowd.
Great, but it's a great way to see it.
Oh, it was great. It was such a good experience.
If only we had seen it with more nerds, like when we saw The Mummy and there were all those mummy heads.
Know. Who knew that was even a thing? We learned the Klingon proverb, dish revenge is a dish best served cold.
Yeah.
Scotty has a nice dramatic moment where when the ship is attacked, one of his, well, it depends on what version you watch. If you watch the original theatrical version, one of his cadets gets killed because he doesn't run away scared like the other kids. He stays at his post and he dies.
Yeah.
But if you watch the director's cut, he says he was my sister's boy. So you realize he's not just crying over a cadet, he's crying over his nephew.
Yeah.
So in the theatrical version, you're kind of like, wow, Scott is really taking this hard. He must have really liked that cadet. But again, it's a character thing, right? We've got
We learned Scotty is sentimental.
Right. At this point, it's like, okay, we've locked into the idea that, you know, you've got Kirk, Spock, Bones, Uhura, Chekhov, Sulu, Scotty. You want to give them all at least a moment.
Right.
At least one moment to chew on. So the fans of them are excited. So we feel like they're all on an
adventure.
Right,
and Chekhov's got all the stuff with him and the Ever Captain and the earbuds.
Right, right.
Well, Hora's got
What does
she have?
I'm trying to think. What does she have in this one? I know in 3 she has a whole kind of thing about like... Or is it 2? Is it 2 where someone's like calls them old? Or calls her old? And she's like, what do you mean? I forget. She has something to do. I don't remember what. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe she doesn't have something to do.
I know in 5 they give her a fucking fan dance to do.
Yeah, that's... we'll get there when we get there. Scott has something to do. I think there's a really interesting, very classic Trek argument between Bones and Spock about the Genesis. Because Spock is being logical and Bones is being very emotional and conservative and kind of anti-technology as he was in the show. And he's like,
this is madness. Like, we're playing God. Right. Like, what are we doing?
He doesn't say... Does he say sacrilege? He doesn't come out and say, I'm a Christian and this is bad. But you get a sense in the way he's so offended by it that he believes in the Genesis story of the Bible and that this is sacrilege.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it's a great moment because if you watch the show, that kind of shit always happened between Spock and Bones. He calls him a cold, green-blooded bastard. Yeah. Bones goes right to the racism all the time. Imagine you had a friend that was like a fucking German, and the minute you guys got into any argument, you fucking kraut piece of shit. You fucking no-good Nazi son of a bitch. Like, he always goes
right for Vulcans.
He always goes right for you fucking Vulcans. I can't. You move into the neighborhood and everything goes to shit.
Yeah, you're lowering the property value.
Never have my daughter date a Vulcan.
Yeah.
So they beam. There's a sequence in this movie that I swear they're trying to do Alien, because they beam them onto the station where the scientists were, and they're like, no one's there. It's like, ooh, where are all the scientists? And we find dead bodies. It's very spooky. It feels like you guys are trying to do Alien now. We find kind of macabre, all the scientists are dead except for mother and son, and they're in that cave because they tested Genesis in like a cave in there, and it's beautiful. It's like this whole like Garden of Eden thing. We have this whole again, it's interesting, and it works because it's through Savick's point of view. The audience gets conned, pun not intended, because there's a conversation between the Spock on the ship and Kirk, where he's saying like, oh, you have 6 days, but really they have 6 hours. And it's coded. Mm-hmm. But we don't know that until the ship's like, okay, we're ready to beam you up. And Savage's like, what do you mean ready to beam us up? I thought we had 6 days. And he's like, no, we were speaking coded. And we, the audience, are fooled, but it works because Savick doesn't know what's going on.
Right.
We're seeing it through her eyes. And, you know, the writer of the book I was just talking about, Phaser's Own Stun, he makes a good point where if you forget 3 and 4 and everything that came after, if you're just watching this movie, you could look at David and Sarek and go, oh, that's the new Kirk and Spock, although they're kind of switched in their personalities. Yeah. This is how it's going to go. Spock's going to die. She's going to be the new Spock.
And then his son's going to come in and be the new...
Right.
Okay.
And then, no, we don't do that at all.
No.
We
no.
basically write her out, and then we just kill him. By the way, I don't know if you know this. This, the VHS for Wrath of Khan, was a very big moment in VHS history because, if you don't know, VHSs, when they were first released, they were lots of money. They were hundreds of dollars because the model they were going after was the theatrical model of the theater rents a film to screen and then they make money off of selling tickets. The idea was originally for video stores. So the only person who would buy these VHSs for hundreds of dollars were video stores, and then they'd make their money back through rentals.
Yeah.
They started selling Wrath of Khan at like $30, which was a huge discount, and it was a huge success, and it's one of the things that moved to more consumer-based marketing of VHS.
Yeah, I'll bet.
I remember it on VHS. I remember my dad watching this movie a lot when I was a kid. This was a big mainstay in our family. So yeah, they're back on the ship. We don't gotta go through it all.
They basically do another standoff.
There's a nebula that they're going to a little bit like going into the
it's modeled off submarines. So
yes, right, exactly. That's
you're going into the deep part of the ocean.
You can't see each other. You don't know where each other are.
Yeah,
and it's very, you know, there are great shots of like them passing each other, but one's higher than the other, mm-hmm. and. It's very well choreographed and edited because you're kind of like, what's going on? And then Kirk kind of sneaks up behind them. The Enterprise sneaks up behind the other ship and basically gets them. Khan quotes again. He quotes Captain Ahab's last lines in the book, from hell's heart I stab at thee. Because they shoot the shit out of them. They're all going to die. So he's like, fuck it, I'm going to die. I'm going to take you with me. He turns on the Genesis device, which will create this big explosion. And if the Enterprise can't get away fast enough, it'll kill them too.
Yeah.
Which is what's happening. In the midst of this, there's something going wrong in the engine room, but the radiation's too... They can't get to it because the radiation is... There's a radiation leak and it's too fucked up. So Spock goes down and takes care of it himself. Bones
tries to stop him. And then he does the thing that... you don't realize is an important thing until in hindsight,
right?
Where he like grabs his neck and he's like, remember.
Right. And he gives, well, he does a good, Bones is like, I'm not going to let you go in there. And he's like, ah, you're right. No, anyway, what's that over there? And there's the Vulcan pinch. And he's like, sorry, doctor, I don't have time to argue with you. He goes in and it's, you know, they're all out of danger and you think, oh, we're happy. But then he looks in Spock's chair and there's no one there. And he's like, oh fuck. And then Scotty's like, you better get down here right away. And it's good. It's good drama. Yeah. I mean, Nimoy's a really good actor. Shatner can be good if you rein him in. His tendency is to go way over the top, but Nicholas Meyer, I guess, reined him in. Because I think he does a very good performance here, of just these two lifelong friends like saying goodbye. But it's also, we should say, you've seen this friendship grow because in the original series, like, they're not tight at the beginning. You know,
no. It
over all the adventures that they go through and Spock not denying his human side and allowing himself to care about friendship and to care about things, they become super close friends. And the death is great.
We know that his real friend is Christopher Pike.
Yes. You know, this is the first time Spock says the line that's, again, oft repeated is, I am now and ever shall be your friend, which is, again, it's very emotional if you've seen the whole show, because it's like, wow, he didn't even care about friends originally. And then he says, live long and prosper, and he dies. And then we've got his, like, eulogy, where they put him in a torpedo and shoot him onto the Genesis planet.
Yeah.
While they're playing Amazing Grace.
His favorite song.
Yes. But even then, I gotta say, the acting from Shatner is really good when he gives the eulogy, and he's like, of all the souls I've met on my journey,
he was the most.
His was the most.
Human.
Human.
And then Human Newman's like, wait a minute.
And then we're basically it. We did it. We did Star Trek 2. Great fucking movie. It's
great.
Still...
Now we gotta do an episode on Star Trek 3.
Yeah. Tune in next week where we shit all over that movie. Yeah. But you know what? We'll find the good in it.
Maybe.
Because you know,
and find out.
Because you know what, Vin? I don't believe in no-win scenarios.
Yeah.
I'm gonna make this episode good no matter what.
We'll find out.
We end every episode by saying,
go bye-bye.